We're 7 days into 2014, and that means many of us are at a critical point. Will we or won't we? Will we bear down and get serious about that New Year's commitment to regular exercise and healthy eating? Or will we let that goal, like so many others before, lapse and be forgotten? I'm Brian Ellison. Today on Central Standard, it turns out science is on our side. An exercise scientist gives us some reason for hope and some tips. And a behavior modification expert helps us understand how we can change those habits and why we usually don't. Why, for so many of us, the resolutions are already over. And speaking of things that are over prematurely, we'll spend a few minutes looking back on the Chiefs season, the thrills and the heartbreaks, and what it all might mean for next year. Hey, training camp's just 6.5 months away. Here's to a better 2014 today on Central Standard after the news. I admit it. I'm doing it just like everyone else. I'm joining up at the gym just like I have in January's past. So will it last 3 months this time, or 3 weeks? Or even if I stick with it for longer than usual, will I get the most out of the time I put in? Good morning. Welcome to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison, and I'm not the only one asking those questions today at the start of a new year, and not just questions about exercise either, about healthier eating and cleaner living and anything that requires changing our behavior. Joining us to tell us about what works and what doesn't and why are Dr. Nicole Moody. She's assistant professor of exercise and sports science at Rockhurst University. Welcome to you, Dr. Moody.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Ann Davis. She's a psychologist and professor at the University of Kansas Medical Center. She directs the Healthy Hawks program, which helps families make healthy changes in their lives. Welcome to you, Dr. Davis.
Thank you very much.
Glad you're both here. So, Dr. Moody, I said before the show I didn't even know there was an academic field of exercise and sports science. What do you study to become an expert in these things?
Well, it's for those crazy people like myself that actually enjoy exercise and want to teach others that exercise is a good thing and all the healthy habits that come with being an active individual. And I teach now, exercise physiology, so what happens to the systems of the body, the skeletal system, the muscular system, cardiovascular and respiratory systems, those things that you've probably heard about in your basic biology classes. What happens to those when you start to exercise? What happens when you exercise for long periods of time? When it becomes a habit, what aspects are changed within those systems that make for a healthier individual? And then we also, even more recently, have started to study what happens with disease. So when individuals aren't active, how do those systems adapt to that inactivity and then set themselves up for disease?
Well, I'm glad someone is studying these things so the rest of us can just benefit from it. At least we can if we actually do some exercise, right?
And exactly.
I know that you're not a personal trainer, but I am sure a lot of people talk to you this time of year about their exercise goals. What sorts of things do you hear?
I hear all types of questions, more related to the behavioral aspect, like you mentioned, that is definitely important, just getting to the point where you will make yourself start to exercise. But in terms of what will work, there's always infomercials or different commercials on TVs. You see things from all different media sources online.
I bet that's not it.
No, it's generally not. And sometimes things are good points, but maybe marketed in a way that aren't really correct. One thing that has been really popular over the last year is the use of interval training. So high-intensity interval training, whether that's in a boot camp style of class or there's other types of programs out there that integrate that high-intensity training. And that is a very good way of training.
Interval training, are we thinking here some of the commercial names like I can't remember, PX, something like that. I can't remember.
P90X. Yes, not necessarily one of my
Can you tell that I'm perhaps not naturally the person most inclined to order
that's
those?
That's all right. P90X kind of makes me laugh because it's one of those that uses a theory of muscle confusion, which isn't really a thing, but it markets well. Mm-hmm. But they use interval type of training programs like CrossFit. A lot of times use high intensity training, and the goal is to create a challenging program that is short and not require you to spend hours upon hours in the gym because we all have busy lives. We don't have a lot of time to get to dedicate to exercise. And those types of training programs do work. These shorter, more intense training programs work. And they work for a variety of reasons. People stick to them because mm-hmm. they can put them in their schedules. But physiologically, they actually, if we want to get a little bit more physiological for a minute, they cause an increase in a hormone called growth hormone. We've probably all heard of growth hormone. If you're a sports fan, you hear about growth hormone in a negative sense. But our bodies produce growth hormone, and we think about that in terms of building muscle and helping repair tissues. But more importantly for an individual trying to lose weight is that it actually increases the breakdown of fat within your body. And we see increases in growth hormone with any type of exercise that you do. But the more intense exercise that you do, the more release of growth hormone that you will have.
I want to get a little deeper into some of the specifics of the particular exercises or workout regimens that might be helpful, especially for someone just trying to set a goal and start a new year. But I want to first talk with you, Dr. Davis, a little bit about another piece of healthier living, and that's what we eat, healthy eating. How important is that relative to an exercise regimen?
It's extremely important because it's awful easy to overeat by 500 calories, let's say, and it's very hard to work that off. Mm-hmm. So I always talk to families about thinking about it like a bank account where you don't want to put in more deposits than you can withdraw. And if you can educate people about the different types of activities that they like to do and how many calories 30 minutes of that activity, let's say, burns, then they're shocked by how much leeway they have in terms of the calories going in.
So good old-fashioned calorie counting.
Good old-fashioned calorie counting. The number one thing that behavioral science has brought to this whole area of healthy living is tracking. The most important thing people can do in order to change their health habits is to track their health habits. And there's all different kinds of ways you can track. They have these fancy Fitbit, things that you can buy. We're in the age of big data where you can track your moods, you can track your activity levels, you can track your calories. All that tracking really informs your behavior choices.
You know, you're an expert on behavioral modification. You're a psychologist. And I guess I'm curious whether it's exercise or healthier eating or something else. What is it that prevents people from changing?
That's a pretty complicated question. I think a big part of it is the environment that you're in. So our environment right now is very what's called obesogenic. And when I first heard that term, I didn't really care for it. I thought, well, what does that mean? But when you think about it, we're in a society that doesn't really promote physical activity very much. People don't get physical activity in their day-to-day lives as much as they used to. And food, although some people might disagree, food is prevalent. Everywhere you go, there's snacks in the kitchen or food being served at a meeting. So
obesogenic, meaning people are more inclined to become obese.
Exactly, okay. Exactly. You could that famous children's movie WALL-E, where the humans in the movie are riding around on those little carts and drinking high-calorie beverages. That's not too far from where we are today.
A rather biting piece of satire on our,
right,
on our present
right,
state.
Right, exactly.
So how hard is it then to actually get away from something that's so deeply embedded in the culture? What does it take? Is it just a matter of sort of willpower, or are there some smaller steps that people can take to get there?
Well, it takes a great deal more effort than it used to in order to be healthy. And it depends on your environment, but you're basically, it's like a fish swimming upstream. So you have to figure out a way to fit physical activity into your daily life rather than it just being a part of your daily life. So it's more effortful to engage in those healthy behaviors.
So where does a person find support or help to do those things? Especially, you say, it depends what environment you're in. What if you're not in a very good environment? What if the rest of your family doesn't exercise or eats too much? What are you supposed to do?
Well, I encourage whole families to change. So rather than focusing on one individual, you want to see the whole family adopt a healthier lifestyle, regardless of their weight status. So they can set a goal around exercise to every night after dinner, they're going to want to go for a family walk. Today, they'd want to bundle up pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
But when you have that kind of support in your environment, you're more likely to be successful in attaining your goals.
So when you have worked with people who are ideally going to go teach people to help meet their goals, as whether it is trainers or people who work in gyms or physical education teachers or whomever. Do you have certain tips? Is there a certain protocol that you encourage folks to follow as people walk through the process of setting up goals and then trying to meet them?
I think the challenge that I face is getting our students to recognize that not everyone is like us. We majored in exercise science. They're majoring in exercise science because they enjoy being active. And this past semester, we had an instance where they had the opportunity to teach their fellow students, but in other majors, about the importance of being active and ways they can be active on our campus. And they were shocked about the people weren't interested. They weren't excited about it. And I said, well, you know, that's probably what you're going to face in the real world. And I think that now as they are approaching, some of my seniors are approaching graduation, they're doing internships, they're starting to see how busy life really is and how you have to think about different aspects of individuals' lives and recognize they aren't just like yourself. They may not be motivated by the same things, and you have to find what will really hit home with that individual. So really developing individual relationships with the client is extremely important to helping them reach their goal.
That's Dr. Nicole Moody. She teaches exercise and sports science at Rockhurst University. Also, we're talking with Dr. Ann Davis. She's a psychologist professor at KU Med. She also co-directs the Center for Children's Healthy Lifestyles and Nutrition. She's in pediatrics, but I guess I'm curious, Dr. Davis, do a lot of the same principles that apply to children follow us into adulthood in these matters?
Very much. It comes down to reinforcement and punishment, and I was just, which are basic concepts, and I was just thinking of that when Dr. Moody was speaking about when people exercise, certain people have a positive, affective, natural response to that exercise. So simply engaging in the exercise is reinforcing. It makes them feel better.
And that's true whether you're young or old.
Right, exactly. But for, I would argue, for more people, you don't have that immediate affective response to exercise. So you kind of make yourself do it because you feel like you should. You maybe pick an activity that is not really your favorite activity, but it's time-wise economical, so you can fit it into 20 minutes. This time of year, people often tend to overexert themselves to try to make up for months of inactivity, so they might overwork out here in the month of January, and that's not a pleasant response. As we all know, the next day you don't feel too well. So all those things are what we call as psychologists punishing that behavior of exercising.
Punishing,
mm-hmm.
Which of course is not a good thing.
Well, there's lots of interpretations of the word punishment, but as a psychologist, all it really means is that it decreases the frequency of the behavior. So in the future, you're less likely to exercise if those things happen.
Okay. So I guess, you know, I keep pressing the both of you for sort of the steps or the pathway to a successful experience of changing behavior, maybe exercise, maybe healthier eating. I'm gathering that it's not that simple, that it can't be reduced to steps no matter what we read around this time of year. Is that right, Dr. Moody?
It definitely is. And I think Ann hit on a critical point when she talked about lifestyle goals. If you know that you are not an individual that's going to go to the gym 5 times a week, don't make that your New Year's resolution. There are a lot of lifestyle changes that could be made to make you a more active individual, to make sure that you're eating better. And over the last several years, a big point is made to making sure that you're active other than during your exercise routine. I know that personally, I like to exercise, but it's easy to get stuck behind the desk at work and be working on the computer for long hours. But making sure that you get up once every 30 minutes, once an hour, and keep active throughout the day and not just during your exercise programs. And so that could be a small goal.
Sure.
That individuals, kind of that first step in becoming active, that would be very helpful too.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. I want to invite our listeners to join the conversation. Have you set a goal for yourself in the new year? How's it going so far? Is it working a whole week into the new year? Do you expect it to continue? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. Why do you think you've succeeded or failed in the past at meeting those goals? Call us and let us know, 235-2888. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Dr. Davis, I've heard that sometimes it's more successful to change behaviors by trying to change one little thing at a time rather than sort of I'm turning my whole life around. I'm changing everything. Is that true? And why is that true?
Yes, you want to pick changes and you want to set goals that are not goals for a short time frame. You want to pick behaviors that you think that you can maintain for the rest of your life, basically. So, for example, when a little boy started our Healthy Hawks program once, he made his goal. He was never going to eat candy again. And I said, well, I don't think that's a very realistic goal. You know, why don't we try to set a goal that's more realistic? There are concepts we use when we're helping families to set goals. I don't know if you guys have heard of SMART goals, but it's an easy sort of acronym to remember. And you want the goal to be very specific. So the number of times you're going to do something or the time of day you're going to do something, you want it to be measurable. That's the M in SMART. So how many times are you going to do it? You want it to be assignable. So who's going to do it? Is mom going to do it or dad going to do it or the child going to do it? And this is gets to your point here, Brian. You want it to be realistic. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to set a goal that's not attainable for you, which is where the tracking comes in. Because you keep track of, let's say you decide to begin this, what was it called, Pro X 350 or
P90X. I wouldn't.
Okay.
Just high-intensity training.
We've now given more airtime to P90X than anyone here wanted to in the first round.
Well, let's say you decided to start some high-intensity interval training. If you keep track this week of your physical activity and you find out you're getting about 3 minutes a day of physical activity, that's not a very realistic goal for you. And the last one is that you want it to be time-related. Mm. So you want to set some sort of time frame on it. So just keep in mind that SMART when you're setting your goals, and it should head you toward a goal that might be good for you.
I'm struck by how different that is than most New Year's resolutions,
exactly.
Which is I'm going to lose weight.
Right, or I'm going to be healthy.
Right, or I'm going to go to the gym more, period. Mm-hmm. As though that would actually achieve that level of specificity and measurability that you're talking about.
Exactly, and we see that with our families because as part of our program, they come in and they set goals based upon what they think are their biggest weaknesses. And oftentimes, especially when we ask moms, why are you there? They'll say, well, I'm here because I want my family to be healthier. That's sort of a good overarching aim, but it's not really what we mean when we say a goal.
Well, if you made a resolution for the year, or if you need some help from our experts on behavior modification or exercise science, give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. 2888. Nicole Moody, you teach exercise and sports science, we've mentioned. Maybe we could talk about some of those specific, sensible, realistic goals. You mentioned trying to be active every half hour or hour, even if you're sitting at a desk job. Let's say you are going to the gym and you're trying to set up a workout. Well, let's not even say you. Let's say I'm going to the gym because I'm going to try. Where do I start? What are some modest first ways to go down that road?
I think a lot of times people think about what they like to do, and sometimes we like to do certain things because we're better at them. And so if you think about the things that you should be doing, cardiovascular exercise, such as walking on a treadmill, doing an elliptical machine, cycling, swimming, strength training, and then flexibility training, a lot of people lean towards that cardiovascular training, not recognizing the importance of training for muscular strength as well.
So things like the treadmill, the bike, the stair steppers.
Mm-hmm. That's what they usually focus on.
But they really should do what?
They need to make sure that they're incorporating that muscular fitness training as well. So the strength training and the stretching as well. And the reason for that, you can not only avoid injury, but also as we get older, we lose our muscle mass. Hmm. And if you don't train that muscle mass, you'll lose it, and setting yourself up for various diseases. But also, you're going to lose your ability to perform basic activities of daily living.
So what kind of diseases are we likely to set ourselves up for by not exercising on the weights enough?
Right. If there's actually a disease called sarcopenia, commonly combined with obesity for sarcopenic obesity. As we age, we actually lose, over the age of 30, you lose about a pound of muscle mass a year, and you gain a pound to a half or half a pound of fat a year. So you may not see a lot of change on the scale, but your body composition is changing a lot. And if you're increasing that fat mass and decreasing your muscle mass, you're going to be more at risk for type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, obesity, and all the diseases related to it.
Okay, so this sounds a little familiar to me in my own experience. And I think part of the reason for that is that the treadmill and the bike are pretty easy to use. The only decision I have to make is how fast the treadmill is going. The weights are pretty intimidating if you don't know what you're doing. So what should I do?
If you have the opportunity to employ the use of a personal trainer, and you can find a personal trainer that has a strong background, of course, I lean towards the individuals that have degrees in the area. This field isn't governed by any agency that requires a national or a state licensure.
So there's no way to really know.
There are certifications through the American College of Sports Medicine and the National Strength Conditioning Association are the most reputable. Also, you'll see a lot of certifications from the National Academy of Sports Medicine. All of those are very reputable programs that if you see a trainer that has that type of a background, I would put my faith in what they're able to do with you.
You know, I'm curious also about motivations and what's going to get people to actually make these changes. Dr. Davis, we had a show yesterday on this program about vanity. One of the questions that came up with our psychologist, Dr. Bruce Leese, in that interview was, you know, does wanting to look better actually make you work harder to look better? I mean, is there something to be said for being a little bit vain as far as behavior modification goes?
I think that it can definitely serve as a big motivator for a certain segment of the population. The problem is for the rest of the population, they're pretty comfortable with who they are. They're pretty comfortable with what they look like. So it's not really going to be a motivator for them. To capitalize upon what Dr. Moody was just saying, there are some behavioral things you can do to make that trip to the gym more likely. One thing would be to pack your bag and have your bag ready to go at all times. Maybe even keep it in your car so that you can just stop by on the way home from work. Make sure you have shoes that fit, that are comfortable for you. Make sure you have clothes that you feel good in. A lot of times we wear our really grungy clothes to the gym. And if you're looking for just that little extra motivation, having some clothes that you like can help. Being sure to schedule that time on your calendar. So putting in that block of, you know, 8 to 9 a.m. or 4 to 5 p.m. and blocking that out, you're less likely to skip it.
Are people more likely to succeed in meeting these goals when they don't do it as something like a New Year's resolution? I mean, New Year's resolutions seem to be almost by definition something we let go of quickly. Is there does it matter what got you interested in the first place in making changes like this?
I haven't seen any research that would suggest that. I do think that I could see it being more acceptable or more common for people to set a New Year's resolution and then let it fall off. I think if you involve the people around you in your goal setting and then post your goals in a very public place, a lot of people use social media for that, then you can get the praise that you need to keep going on your goals.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue to look at how we can meet those goals and how we can change ourselves, our health, our diet, our exercise routine. We'd love for you to share your story of trying to be healthier or stronger or faster or better. What worked and what didn't? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. Dr. Nicole Moody, our assistant professor of exercise and sports science at Rockhurst, Dr. Ann Davis, psychologist at KU Med. They'll both be with us when we come back. I'm Brian Ellison. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking today about how we can meet our New Year's goals, especially with regard to healthier living, exercise, diet, the things that we need to change. How do we do it? We're talking with Dr. Nicole Moody. She teaches exercise and sports science at Rockhurst, and Dr. Ann Davis, who is a professor at KU Med, co-director of the Center for Children's Healthy Lifestyles and Nutrition. I want to ask you about the starting this as children, Dr. Davis. How much more difficult is it to be healthy as an adult if you didn't give this some attention when you were a kid?
I think it can be very easy to maintain behaviors that are started in childhood. We've already talked kind of about the importance of the environment. So as your environment changes, your behaviors are going to change to a certain extent. But if you're brought up in a really healthy home that eats a lot of fruits and vegetables and gets a lot of their joy from being out and doing physical activity, that type of thing is going to maintain.
Mm-hmm. And as you encounter, do you work with children as well? Do you teach people to work with
children?
Well, all right. How much harder is this for? And I suppose that actually introduces another piece, which is parents with children have a harder time. That's just another element of busyness in their lives, right?
My child's very young, so she's a little bit more impressionable. You know, I go for jogs with her in the jogging stroller, so she knows what exercise is. Eating vegetables can be a challenge, but I think Dr. Davis really hit it on the head. If you want to make sure that you're setting your child up for a healthier lifestyle, you have to make that change within your family as a whole. It has to be something that everyone's doing so that everyone can see the positive change and the importance of it. I know that with my students, I don't know if I'd call them children, but a lot of times we focus on making lifestyle changes. We do goal-directed projects, and usually they're more nutrition-related because I really think that that's for those interested in exercise, that can be a harder change to make. And focusing on, like has been mentioned, logging what you eat, what exercise you do, that's really going to be the key to making those types of changes.
Mm-hmm. Are there other goals that you would hope folks would consider? I mean, there's some obvious ones like stop smoking if you're a smoker, but in terms of health, other changes besides diet, besides exercise that folks can make that can make a difference?
Yeah, I think some of the ones we recommend are things like no calorie beverages. People get a lot of calories from beverages that they're just not aware of, and they don't really think of that as satiating their hunger. Mm-hmm. So it's an easy way to get rid of calories without really feel like you're missing much of anything. Another one would be to get TVs out of kids' bedrooms, all screens. Kids do not need to have screens in their bedrooms. That just promotes sedentary activity as well as interfering with all different kinds of things. So we usually recommend that one. Family meals are very important for obesity prevention, but also for long-term psychosocial health.
Why is that? Why do family meals tend to prevent obesity?
Well, when you eat at home and you cook the meal, you know what's in it. Mm. So you're less likely to put in as many fats and oils and sugars as people might get when they eat out because the restaurant is trying to sell you something delicious. So when you prepare the meal at home, you're more likely to know what's in it. When you eat with your family, you learn about what's a proper portion size by watching your parents. Now, pediatric obesity tends to run with parent obesity. Mm. So there are some complications.
You
there.
Learn about portion size for better or for worse.
Exactly. Yeah. For better or for worse. But family meals is another frequent target.
I want to press a little deeper into the science behind some of this exercise health. Dr. Moody, you mentioned earlier some of the interval training and the intense short work in particular areas versus walking on a treadmill not very fast for 60 minutes every mm-hmm. day. Why is it that this shorter duration, more intense workout has a better effect?
One of the main reasons, really the key reason that's been noted in the literature is really the increase in growth hormone that comes with the high-intensity training that then it results in an increase in the amount of fat that you're using, not just during that single bout of exercise, but over the course of the day. So you're burning more fat. Another reason is that you increase your heart rate. You take in more oxygen during those short bouts of exercise, so your metabolism speeds up for a longer portion following the exercise bout. And then individuals may have heard about cortisol, a hormone.
That's a hormone, right.
Yeah, a hormone that typically gets, I don't want to say a bad rap because it definitely has some negative effects, but it's necessary for our body to have in order for growth and repair.
And cortisol occurs naturally in our
bodies. It does occur naturally, and it's released with exercise to try to maintain your metabolism. But if individuals are either overtrained, so exercising too much, which isn't always the case, but also if they have too much stress in their lives, so stress related to work, related to their general lifestyle, related to family, anything that could cause stress might cause an increase in cortisol. And it's kind of a hormone that is misunderstood in many regards because it has some positive roles in controlling inflammation, but when it's too high, it can cause a lot of problems, whether that is weight gain, retention of fat, especially around the abdominal region. So the high-intensity training, the goal there is that the levels of cortisol can somewhat be maintained a little bit better.
And so the way to do that is with the high-intensity training.
It's not the only way, but that's what a lot of programs that are – new programs are marketed a little bit more in that way. There isn't clear research comparing the two types of training. I really think the main part of the high-intensity training is that it increases your fat that you're burning for a long portion of the day.
Dr. Davis, we're almost out of time. What is the – cutting edge or the next big thing in behavior modification, assuming there's not a miracle drug that allows us to accomplish whatever we want with a single pill. Where are we now? What's new in this field and what's next?
Well, that's a huge question. I would say that a lot of the field right now is focused on policy changes and on prevention, which are two very important aspects of solving the obesity epidemic. I tend to work in treatment, so treating kids who are already overweight or obese, and we're not getting as much support lately in the treatment area. But policies, healthier schools, healthier work environments, those things are all important, and they will make our environments healthier, which will make it easier for us to keep up these goals that we're setting.
Well, that's Dr. Ann Davis. She's a psychologist and professor at the University of Kansas Medical Center, director of the Healthy Hawks Program. We're also joined today by Dr. Nicole Moody. She is assistant professor of exercise and sports science at Rockhurst. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you, Brian. It was a pleasure.
And best wishes to all as they undertake their goals for 2014.